Are you an entrepreneur that would like to quickly free up and create more cash flow and lasting wealth? Welcome to the Chris Miles Money Show. Chris Miles is a cash flow expert and the financial advocate for the entrepreneur. Chris will teach you how to create more freedom and more prosperity right now, not about saving 25 to 40 years from now. It's all about creating wealth and prosperity today. He's been featured on U.S. News, CNN Money, Bankrate.com, interviewed internationally on TV and radio, and has a high reputation for getting his clients fast, life-altering financial results with his company, Money Ripples. Learn more at MoneyRipples.com. Now, here's your host, Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor, welcoming you out again this week. So excited to have you guys on. This show is all about you guys. Like, the reason we do this show is because we want you to have the same thing that we've experienced as well, which is financial freedom, cash flow right now. Not someday, not 30 or 40 years of hopeful retirement and crappy stock market junk. Like, this is all about creating freedom for you right now. Can you guys get your money working for you so you don't have to work so hard for money? So remember to check out our website, moneyripples.com. We got a great ebook on there called Beyond Rice and Beans if you want to find great ways to free up some cash flow right now too. So on our show today, I have a special guest by the name of Mitch Stevens. Now, Mitch, you know, I've actually been on his show as well, but I got to tell you, I was super impressed to the point where I knew I had to have him back on mine. And, you know, the thing about Mitch is that he's a, you know, like I tell you all guys all the time, like when I bring people on, I don't bring posers. I don't bring people that are phony, people that haven't been doing anything. You know, I had a client email me. She said, you know, I know podcasters out there that have done like one deal and then they teach a big course on how to do that real estate investing. And this, guys, I don't bring those people on this show. Like, I've got, you know, Mitch is definitely the guy that's done thousands of deals, like done this for decades. And he's got a very special strategy of how you can actually become the bank and have great collateral with your properties. So, Mitch, welcome to our show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chris. I like that, Ripplers. Ripplers, and I love the title of your book, too, Beyond Rice and Beans. I think that's very clever.
Hey, we're all about creating a ripple effect, and I'm all about slapping Dave Ramsey in the face. So,
yeah, you know, I bought my first 100 houses on credit cards. I'd have freaked him out.
Exactly. Well, it's a good point because, I mean, he went bankrupt doing real estate, but the lesson he got out of it was, hey, don't ever go into debt. In fact, I don't think I like real estate that much, right? And I know you and I, we've had, you know, even though we've had different experiences and in some cases even similar to him, we've definitely come out with way different lessons and we've become richer for it. So, yeah it's a pleasure to have you on.
Like, I know, mean, you know, the more money I borrow, the richer I get.
I love it.
I mean, you know, I borrow millions of dollars, you know, and it's non-recourse, but I don't have to sign a guarantee because the collateral is so valuable that the best thing that ever happened to my lenders is that they got my property because I don't borrow that much against the property. You know what I mean? I never over leverage. I'm a big fan of not over leveraging. Don't get me wrong. But you know, there's good debt and there's bad debt, right? So you just make sure that your loans are killer. I say killer. They're really to your advantage given the value of the property. You know, so.
Yeah. Well, it's true. Like there's so much you can do. And I talk about a lot on the show about stewardship, right? Like that, you know, the saver and the spender mentality, both those mentalities are in scarcity, but stewardship where we're actually trying to be wise stewards, including, especially if we are leveraging assets and things like that, make sure we're wise with how we do it. And that's where real wealth is created. Already, if people have been listening to this, you've been throwing out nuggets and take us back. I mean, like you're obviously taking us back to your path here. Like what even caused you to want to do this? Like what made you?
Everything is an accident. I can read all the books you want to, but until I accidentally screw up and do that theory or do that method, I don't get it. You know, because to me, all the living's in the learning. I mean, the learning's in the living. You know, if I don't live it, I don't learn it. And I can read about it all I want to, but it's not going to do anything. So one day I screwed up and I bought a house, a place to live in. And then I wanted a bigger place. And so I rented out that one and I bought a bigger place. Never doing it like as an investment reason. It's just, I found the other house I wanted, and I couldn't live in two houses at one time, so I moved into the bigger house, and I said, well, what am I going to do with the other one? I said, I guess I'll rent it out. I mean, it was not a plan. And then someone came and made me an offer, and I sold both my houses in like one day, and I made more on those two houses sale than I did in 2 years at my job. And I, you know, then I was like, duh, maybe I better look into this a little bit. What did I just do? How can I duplicate this, you know? So the whole thing's an accident. And I just started reading, you know, Robert Allen's Nothing Down, and my ears could hear it. My eyes could see the guy's lips moving. I understood the words perfectly, but I didn't own the concept in my heart that I didn't need my money to get heavily involved. What I really needed to do was be able to find great deals and be able to contract them up to my favor. When I finally did a Nothing Down deal, I did it on a credit card because the houses were like, put $10,000 on this card, put $10,000 on this card, and that'll buy the house. Then give me $10,000 on this card, and I'll go fix it. And then I'll go sell it for, you know, that's $30,000. Then I'll go sell it for $60,000 or $55,000 or whatever. Well, it dawned on me, I just did a Nothing Down deal. I get it. I don't have to have my own money to do this. And then I started finding partners. I mean, when some of the deals were too big for credit cards, I'd already had people circling around me because they were kind of amazed at what I was doing. They thought it was very ballsy. I didn't think it was ballsy at all. I mean, if you know something's worth $100 and you can buy it for $50, I mean, what kind of courage does that take? It doesn't take any courage. You know, but everyone's looking at me like I'm like either freaking weird or I'm extremely courageous, and I didn't understand either one of those.
You just didn't overthink it. That's the big key, right?
No, the question was, I know how much money's in this house. I mean, that was the only thing that was a fact, because I could do the comps, I could put around. When I said that house was worth $100, that wasn't a guess. There was super evidence, you know what I mean? It wasn't just me saying it. There was like 10 other people that wrote a check or went and got a new loan to prove it, that those houses in that neighborhood was like that. They're called comps, you know?
Yeah.
And so I wasn't worried. Try to explain that to your wife the first 30 days that you're married and you have $250,000 worth of credit card debt that you're not crazy.
Right. Well, what you're doing is kind of like what we teach on the show. Like when I say anti-financial advisor, it's true. Like almost anything I teach is almost anti to the quote, what would be quote unquote common sense financial stuff, which,
those financial advisors can't make any money off of you telling you what I'm fixing to tell you, because there's no commission scheme. It hasn't been Wall Streetenized. It hasn't been mainstreamized. You know, they can't get a commission. They can't charge you a fee. Well, they could, but I mean, but not in the suit and tie sense that they want to do it. For our whole lives, you and me and our parents before them have been sold a big bag of, because they're going to sell us what they can get. And then they got you convinced that in order for something to be no or low risk, I mean, there's no such thing as no risk. So let's just get that off the table right now. But to be minimal risk, okay, that you have to get 1% or 0.5%. That's bull too. I mean, if you loan somebody $100,000 on a $400,000 house, I don't think, and you get paid 10% or 8% or whatever, I don't think that's a high risk deal. And you're making eight times what they're telling you is acceptable for a minimal risk deal.
I want to dig into that a little bit, because I think that's a key mentality switch that most people need to have, is that what you're actually doing. Although, and I was going to say this earlier in the show too, is that, you know, some people might listening, and I know from us talking off the air too, that you're not a gambler, but some people would be like, oh, he sounds like a gambler. Oh my gosh. Why would you put money on a credit card versus having a mortgage and this and all that kind of stuff. Right. And
I'll tell you why I didn't put on a mortgage. I didn't put on a mortgage because no one would give me a loan. I didn't make enough money. And the only thing was, this was back in a time 20 years ago when if you had good credit, you sent into the credit card and said, I want your credit card, and they run your credit. And if you had good credit, they gave you everything they had, the best card, the best rate, you know, everything. And these credit cards that I was using were 0% interest. So it wasn't like the mortgage company was going to beat the rate. And these credit cards didn't ask me for a damn thing except my credit score. And I'd give it to them, and then they'd send me the card. Yeah. And I'd ask them for their highest cash advance limits and what they were. And of course, I sent into cards that had the highest cash advance limits, like 15, 20, 25, 30,000 sometimes cash advance limits. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was looking for in the card. What's your cash advance limit? As soon as they hit a number that was big enough for me, I was applying for the card. I had 45 credit cards
Oh, wow.
And they were all 0% interest. Uh-huh. And when I sold the houses, all the money was in my bank because there was no liens on the houses. How I stayed straight was I glued the credit cards I taped them into the side of the folder. If I used $1 off that card belonged to that folder for that house. You couldn't commingle anything. If you used $1 on that card was taped inside there. So I'd use up like two or three or four or five cards and then a piece of one. And then when I sold the house, all the money would go to my bank account. And then I just call up my wife and go, look, get in that file for 123 Main Street, call all the credit card companies, find out how much we owe them all, send them checks, and tell me how much is left over out of $63,497.
Uh-huh.
Call me back and go, okay, well, you made $25,000. Looks like, okay, good. Is all the credit card people paid? Yeah. Okay, good. Next.
Wow. That's awesome. So obviously that's kind of how you got your start and you built your wealth and did, you know, thousands of deals. How are you doing it today? And what are you having people do now?
Today, I function. Let me just tell you what a typical deal looks like, okay?
Yeah.
Don't get your calculator out and tell me I'm off on my payment by $4. I'm rounding this stuff up. Get the theory, okay? Just the theory.
Mm-hmm.
So I go out and I sell houses based on the rents. I figure out what that house rents for, and then I back into the rent to figure out what I can sell that tenant the house for, and they'd have a payment the same as their rent. And that ends up being my owner finance value or my owner finance price.
Mm.
So here's the formula, because I know you guys want it. So here it is. You take the rent. You minus the taxes and the insurance, the monthly taxes and the monthly insurance. And that leaves this tenant a number, and that number is how much that tenant can afford to pay on a principal interest payment. That's phase one. That's step one of the formula. So let's say the rent's $1,000. Let's say the taxes and the insurance are 100 and the insurance is 50. So 1,000 minus 100 monthly taxes and 50 monthly insurance is 850, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's 850 this tenant potentially has for a principal interest payment. If we use the terms 10% in 30 years, that translates to a $98,000 loan balance. If he can borrow $98,000 at 10% for 30 years and have a payment right around
$850.
Mm, okay. Or you can just take the $850 and multiply it by 115. You see, I'm a simple man. Mm-hmm. I'm a very simple man. I have functioned my whole life on a $3 calculator from the dollar store. Now, that screws me up. $3 calculator from a dollar store, that messes me up. But I can figure out how, all these houses with this calculator that you got to hold up to the sun so the solar panel. So I figure out the rents on, you know, Rentometer or Zillow or whatever. I usually use about five sources, but I also love to use the apartments down the street because if the apartment's worth $750, then a house definitely is worth more than that. Mm-hmm. And so now this guy can afford to finance $98,000. Well, if he can afford to finance $98,000, what is the owner finance price? Because I got to have a down payment.
Right.
So you add 10% on top, and I like to add 12% on top because I like to get bigger than 10% down payment. So if you add 12% on top,
$110,000.
And that's what the owner finance price is. Now I know what I can sell it for. Now I know what I need to buy it for. You know, now I can go in and negotiate to try to buy because I know what my exit price is. And to believe in that formula, you have to believe that the person paying $1,000 rent would rather pay $1,000 to own if they just knew how, if someone would just give them a chance, okay? Not 100% of the people want to, but I don't even know exactly how many. I just know it's a ton, a lot of them. You know, 85% or 87% or 83% or 79% of all the renters, whatever the number is, it's around something like that, and it's enough. It's enough for me to stay in business for, you know, going on 2,000 deals in 22 years. And I know what I'm talking about when I do it because I lived it. I've lived it hundreds and hundreds of times. So that 110 price, that's not the MAA appraisers, the MAI appraisers number. That's not the broker's professional opinion of value. It has nothing to do with those other values because those other values have to do with comps. They have to do with sales of two kinds of people. One that wrote a check and the other one that had good enough qualifications to get a traditional loan. My guy can't be a member of that club. He's been excluded. They won't open the door for him.
Right.
So his next best choice is to get control of a property at the same monthly cost as his rent today.
But now he's getting equity in it.
Freeze it. So let's just say I go in and I get this, and it happens all the time. I get this property under contract for $50,000. I'm going to borrow $52,000, and I'm going to borrow it 8% interest only, 5 years, non-recourse, collateral only, because look at the LTV. I'm borrowing $52,000. I'm going to give this entity a first lien position on a house that I'm going to sell for $110,000.
Mm-hmm.
I think that entity is pretty well protected, don't you?
Absolutely. You got like half his equity, half his loan. That's pretty awesome.
And this is really like a 40% LTV or 45 or something. It's low.
Yeah.
And it happens. I never borrow more than 65%. So even if I paid 65 for this house or 67 or 110,000, it's still a good position, right?
Mm-hmm.
I place myself on this. If I want to pay more than 65% for something, I got to put in my money, because I got to protect these entities that are loaning me the money.
And yeah, you're not doing the credit card thing anymore.
No, because the credit cards you couldn't go 5 years with a credit card. I need to create long-term cash flow.
Yeah.
So you know, the credit cards got me to a point. And then I started getting the trust of people, regular people who were sick and tired of making 0.5% on their money. You know, sick and tired of it. And sick and tired of gambling in Wall Street. Sick and tired of that too.
Yeah.
So we found each other somehow. I mean, I was looking and they were looking, and over the years, a lot of us have met. And so I'm paying out $350 a month for my borrowed money. I borrowed the extra $2,000. It's hardly over leveraging, right? Can we agree on that? I borrowed an extra $2,000. Whoa, institutions wouldn't let you do that to save your life. But it cost me $2,000 to find these people to sell me a $110,000 house at $50,000. These guys are not normal, okay?
Yeah.
They're caught up in some form of chaos, and I live in that world, and I advertise and peruse that world every day. Or today my people do it, but anyways, so it costs about $2,000. So I'm just trying to get my $2,000 back, because I do about 100 houses a year consistently in my whole career.
Mm-hmm.
Some years a little more, some years a little less, but it averages 100 houses a year, unless I'm on some kind of sabbatical or take a year off or something.
Sure.
So if I leave 2,000 and 100 houses this year, that's $200,000 that I've left laying around. And if I do it 5 years in a row, that's $1 million I've left laying around. I don't have $1 million to leave laying around. Do you?
Right. Nope.
So now, and then I sell it for 110 with, say, 12,000 down. I get 12% down, or let's just say 12. I got like 98,000 owed to me, and that guy owes me $850 a month, principal and interest, just like I calculated.
Mm-hmm.
And I owe $350. So I've picked up $14,000 up front to create a $500 positive cash flow, of which I am not a landlord. If the air conditioner breaks, it's not mine. I sold it to the guy that's in there on installments, on payments. Right. I am a mortgage company. And so, you know, you don't have to do this a lot of times, because this is where the wholesalers are dying out there. And they don't know. I'm fixing to make your wholesalers puke. What's the average wholesale commission? When I ask this in front of an audience of 100 people, the resounding numbers is between $5,000 and $15,000. But most of the time it's $8,000 is usually what the average assignment fee or wholesale fee is. Would you agree with me, kinda?
Yeah.
Well, look what happened here. The wholesaler, when he gets that fee, it's over. Done. Income stopped.
Right.
Got to start over again. When I do my strategy, I got, in this scenario, $14,000 up front. And I created $500 a month for 360 months. That's $180,000 that's still owed to me. And this is why I'm a multi-millionaire, because every time I do want to do like this, I'm owed hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the money that I collect up front. I buy a house every 4 days. That's my model. That's what I teach specifically. I bought houses every different way, subject to assignments, wholesales. Last year, I bought 2017. I bought 88 houses, in the hottest market in San Antonio, Texas, I've ever seen in 22 years. There's a guru on every corner, every weekend, if not three. And everyone who watched TV last night has watched Flip Something and they're a house buying guy for at least 8 months till they figure out that this is a real job. Mm-hmm. And that check that they showed you, they forgot to minus the expenses. So anyways, I bought 88 houses. I wholesaled two. I retailed 24 of them, mostly because a lot of my people around me only get paid upon success. And some of them were getting, at times they get lean. So I got to liquidate a house so they can live to work for me another quarter.
Yeah.
But then I owner financed straight up 62 of them. Like I said, I probably could have owner financed almost all of those 24 plus the 62, but I had to liquidate to keep people who are not as financially sound as me running. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's my model. That's what I teach. It's not overly complicated on the surface. It has its own minutia like everything else. But, here's the thing. I'm making 8% on my borrowed. I mean, I'm paying 8% on my borrowed money, but I'm loaning it out at 10. So for every dollar I borrow, I'm making 2%. So if I have $1 million out, I got a 2% CD. If I have 14 million out, I have a $14 million 2% CD because I'm making 2% arbitrage.
Right.
But I get the whole 10% on the equity. So in that scenario, the guy owed me $98,000. I owed $52,000. So what's that? $46,000 that I'm making the full 10% on because there's no debt in that. And I'm paying myself to do that. That's why I love this plan. It's why I've been doing it for 22 years. It's why the majority of my transactions I sell with owner financing. And I do this all with private money.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure those private lenders are loving it too, right? I mean, they're loving the fact they're like, hey, cool. I'll pay me 8%. I do nothing and you do all the work. And that's always fun too, right?
Well, people, the biggest myth in the planet, and I'm not hope. Don't get me wrong. There's been a lot of millionaires made in the rental business and I get it. But you want to talk about a myth that's been portrayed. It's almost like Wall Street. The first thing the gurus say when they're trying to sell you the rent house is, okay, you're collecting $1,200 rent and you got a $600 payment, so you're making $600, right? Well, you do that times 12, and it's like, bull. You just assume that nothing ever broke, ever, or no one ever moved out. I mean, where did you get that? Because the rent houses I had, stuff broke every day.
Right.
I mean, if you sat out in the street with a lawn chair and a Coke, you could sit there and watch your house break.
It's true.
Seriously. And so, all that money I was supposed to make on paper, I had 25 houses. I was supposed to make like $300 a house. Every one of them every year had something happen that wiped out the whole 300 a month for the whole 12 months. Mm-hmm. I ended up making no money. When I started owner financing them, that $7,500 a month started coming in and it never left. The only time it ever has to leave is if there's a foreclosure, but it leaves for a little while and then you get the people out and then you get another down payment from someone else. It comes back.
Do it again.
So that's my MO. That's what I do.
Yeah. So I want to review just a few key points here that I love about how you do this. I mean, one, you become the bank, right? In the sense that, now you become the lien holder on a property, not just like you're saying, the landlord. You're not the landlord at all. You're actually the lien holder. You're just simply holding the note on that property. And like you said, you get money up front, which is great. That's really awesome. Two, there's huge collateral. And that's great, especially when you're getting investor money and things like that. Like whether it's you or the investors, you guys are probably more protected than anybody. And in fact, I get a lot of people lately saying, yeah, but what if the market goes down again, which happens very rarely in recessions. I mean, we had one 10 years ago.
I want to talk to you about that, though. If there's a recession-proof business on this planet, what I describe, this owner finance strategy, is recession-proof. I'll be happy to tell you why if you got a minute.
Yeah.
What happens in a recession or what causes the recession? Can we agree? Now, remember this. The core belief was that a person paying $1,000 rent would rather pay $1,000 to own. You have to believe that from the tip of your toes to the top of your head, or else this isn't going to work, okay?
Right.
Do you believe that?
Yep.
That the average renter would rather own if he could for the same amount per month. Do you believe it? Okay. Second thing you have to believe is, which is not a stretch at all, is that banks stop lending. It's either the reason there's a recession or it's the cause of a recession. But either way, banks stop loaning in a recession. Do we agree on that?
Yeah, money stops circulating as much, and that's why there's a recession. Yeah.
Okay, so I want all the listeners and you too, don't overthink this. Just really simply, what happens to the price of houses when no one can borrow money to buy houses?
Usually down.
They would go down, right? Because the supply of money in, of loans to do this, because most people need a loan, right? Most people got to go to a mortgage company or a bank to buy a house. Right. So less people are buying houses because they're not given loans. So the inventory of houses goes up and people start dropping their price to compete with each other because there's too many houses for sale now. And everyone's house is staying on the market for a long time. And the prices just drop. Okay.
Especially people are foreclosing or they're losing jobs, just trying to sell it fast. Yeah, they're going to drop the price.
2009 and 2010, I was buying houses at prices I hadn't seen for 15 years. That $50,000 house I was buying for 27 or 25. It was right out. I had been in the business over 15 years, and I knew what I remembered those prices. I could drive down the streets of my town and tell you which one I bought 15 years ago for $13,000. I could tell you. I could point at them. And so when people can't buy houses, Chris, what kind of houses are they living in? If they're not living in an owner-occupied house, what kind of house are they living in?
Whatever they can rent.
Rent. A rent house. So yep. Housing sales drop, prices drop, and there's pressure put on the rents because everyone's a friggin' renter right now because no one can get a loan. What happens when everyone becomes a renter? What happens to rents?
That drives the prices up.
It drives the rent prices up. Now, Chris, what did I tell you my owner finance value is based on?
Based on rent price or current rent. Rent,
right? I had that formula and I back into the rent. So in 2011 and 2012, I was buying houses at the low of the low and I was selling at the high of the high. And even though the appraisal came in at $25,000, I was still owner financing the house for $59,900 because that's what the rents said it was worth.
Right.
And I was doing it in the day. I would buy the house, not do a damn thing to it, put it up for sale tomorrow or the same day that I bought it. And sell it within 15 to 20 to 30 days. Today, my average is 9 days on the market. Today, right now, the last 150 houses I calculated about 3 weeks ago, I have 9 days on the market due to some halfway genius marketing things, but we won't get into that. This is the greatest business in the world because if you can do good during the good times, like right now, I'm doing plenty good. It's boom time. It's been a seller's market. I'm still doing good. But I'm going to boom like crazy in the recession because, and let me tell you why. Because when those prices drop and the banks stop loaning money, I don't need a bank to buy the houses. I'm using private people and I'm paying them 8%. These people have been with me for decades. I've never given back a house or been foreclosed on or missed a payment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why I have 14 million because if I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do with that money, they wouldn't have stayed with me all this time. They wouldn't keep giving me more or referring people. I didn't need a bank to buy the house, and my buyer didn't need a bank to buy the house from me. I was open on both ends in the middle of a recession when the banks were closed. So that's the very rare business. It's a very rare business model that you boom in a recession, and what a friggin' relief that is. I never have to worry about the down cycle. In fact, if you get close to me and you hear me whisper, I'll say, I think the recession's coming. I'm so happy. But I wouldn't even pray for a recession because a lot of people get hurt in that. But you know, if when it comes, you know, I bought 45 houses in 45 days in the last recession when I got tuned in and said, okay, this is the time that they've been telling me about. This is the time in my city where things are down and you're supposed to buy when things are down. And this is the market. When I snapped, I just started buying up everything. I scared myself because I bought 45 houses in a row. And at the time, I was the house buyer and the house seller. So when I was buying these houses, a house a day, no one was selling my houses. And I looked back and there was 45 vacant houses and I scared myself. Next recession is not going to be like that because I have a buying machine on one side of my office and I have a selling machine on the other side of my office. And I'm just going to go out and buy and buy and buy. And I'm just going to get one of those, you know, those horse whips like they had in the horse and buggy days, and I'm just going to beat my salesman to death with it. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm kidding. And anyways, that's why, you know, sometimes my investors call me during the recession. Go, are we going to be okay? Are we going to be? I says, are we going to be okay? You're like better than you've ever been. You know what I mean?
Right.
This is, don't worry about you. You're getting more house for the money than you've ever gotten. You know, don't worry. And the rents are high.
Right. You've covered your bases no matter where you go. You got the down payment. You've got huge equity. I mean, you're essentially being the bank, but you're being probably the safest bank, you know, safer than most banks are, even when they do their own lending. So it's,
well, the problem with banks is when they get a house back, they don't know what to do with it. And they certainly can't finance it to someone with less than stellar credit. Or someone who can't check all the boxes, you know, time on the job, you know, can you verify this? Can you verify that? You know, I'm looking, I don't sell to bad people. I sell to good people that had bad things happen and they've recovered, but the credit bureaus are not forgiving them.
Right.
You know, I see what happened. I understand exactly. Like this one lady said, I said, you know, she had like $15,000 down for a $100,000 house. And I looked at her credit and I said, man, she was going along really good. And then about 2 years ago, she had a 2 year bad run and she just came out of it about a year and a half ago. And I'm looking at the credit report and says, I called her and I said, look, you're doing so good here. You're like, it seemed like your whole life, you're great. And then this 2 years, you collapse to a 430 and it goes for about 2 years. And then it just pulls right out. And you're good again for the last year and a half. What happened? He says, well, my husband was, we have three kids. I'm a stay-at-home mom. My husband was a truck driver. He made about $150,000 a year. And I already knew what she was going to say. Mm-hmm. He had an accident one night and he didn't come home. He died. Mm. And that was the 2 years. I said, so what got you out of that? She says, I married a man that makes $300,000 a year now. I said, okay, problem solved. You're in. And that could happen to anybody. You know what I mean? It's amazing how, like, I've gone 57 years with good credit. Mm-hmm. Any day something could happen that's beyond my control. You know, good Lord wants to teach you a lesson about something, and that's what it needs. It's going to happen. So I never hold it against them, but the credit reports don't forgive them. You know what I mean?
Yep. Man, this is awesome stuff, Mitch. Like, there is so much good content here and so much good stuff. I know you got probably all of us salivating here for more. You know, if somebody wanted to learn more about how you do what you do, right? How would they do that? Like, what would they do?
I'm not hard to find. And here's the thing. I'm not a Milhouse. I take maybe 15 one-on-one people a year, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then I qualify those guys just to make sure, because I need to make sure that you're the right person for me. And the right person for me is someone I know I can help, that's in the right market, has the right mindset, has the right set of talents. I don't teach people how to write. I don't teach new people stuff, how to write a contract or anything on that level, you know, the one-on-one level.
Yeah, I'll be sure to put that link in the show notes for sure. And we'll definitely make sure we can get people connected to you. So, and also, I know you have a podcast as well, like I mentioned earlier. So you have the RE Investor Summit.
Yeah, reinvestorsummit.com. reinvestorsummit.com. And I interviewed you there. I learn a lot from these interviews. You know, people think I do it because I want to disseminate all my knowledge or whatever. I do it because it keeps me sharp. I get to talk to smart people like you and all kinds of people that I'd never really get to meet if it wasn't for that podcast. And that's what keeps me in the game.
Likewise. I totally get it. Well, Mitch, it's been a true honor. I really appreciate you having you on today. It's been awesome. So thank you so much for being here.
All right, let's do it again sometime, both
for
ways.
Sure.
Me to me and me to you. I appreciate you very much, man.
You betcha. And everybody else, thanks for joining us today. Make sure you make a wonderful and prosperous week. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to The Chris Miles Money Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and make us a part of your daily routine. And check out our blogs and learn more about Chris, his services, and how we can help you at moneyripples.com. Join us next time on the Chris Miles Money Show.